This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. While Postmaster Ben Franklin was out of the country for years at a time representing the Pennsylvania colony in England, it was his wife who ran the postal service. Martha Washington spent every winter for the 8 years of the Revolutionary War at Valley Forge with her husband to keep the troops from deserting. And after John Corbin was killed at Fort Washington, New York, his wife Margaret took over his artillery position. These are not stories you read about in most history books, and longtime Morning Edition and ABC News commentator Cokie Roberts wanted to change that. She's written the book Founding Mothers. We'll talk to her today, and then we'll hear about the latest research into fibromyalgia. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon, Cokie.
Hi, nice to be with you.
So we
how are things there in Cincinnati?
They're good. A little colder today than yesterday, but
yeah, we're having that too.
Snow tomorrow, so you know it's April. What can you expect? So Founding Mothers, it's really been a very interesting book to read. It's a children's book. I still found it delightful. Tell me a little bit about why you decided to write the book.
Well, I wrote the grown-up version that came out in 2004, and actually, it ended up being two books, Founding Mothers and then Ladies of Liberty. So it was a long process. I'm sorry about that phone. I thought I had unplugged them all, but there you go. And the fact is that it was very, very interesting to learn about these women. And the minute that the adult book came out, the publisher said, you know, we really ought to do this for children. And that was 10 years ago. And instructively, something I absolutely didn't know, good children's book illustrators, and Diane Good, who illustrated this book, is a wonderful artist, are very, very busy. And it's hard to get on their schedules and hard to get them to be able to find the time to do yet another book. So it took this long to get this book out. But I'm delighted that I waited for her because she's a Caldecott Medal honor winner, and she totally got into the subject. And so it was a wonderful pairing.
Was it difficult to take the stories as you had written them for adults and then make them so they would be understandable for children?
Well, you will sympathize with this, Marianne. The fact is that being a broadcast journalist made it easier. We are used to telling things in short chunks and, you know, writing those one-minute news spots. And so it really did make it easier because I did know how to condense a lot of information into a very small space. And also, I have grandchildren who range in age now from 8 to 13, and I don't think you have to talk differently to children than you do to grown-ups. You might be careful, somewhat more careful in your vocabulary, and maybe not as maybe not interject as many asides as I might in other writing, but I think you have to be respectful of children, and so I didn't feel any need to write down to them in any kind of way.
Did you try it out on your grandkids?
Oh yes, my grandchildren were actually very involved from the beginning, particularly my oldest granddaughter, who's now 13, because she is a really, really talented artist, clearly gotten from the other side of the family, and she. And so she looked at some of the prospective artist illustrators with me, and we talked about, you know, whose style would be best for this kind of story. And then when the book did come out, and I've talked a lot about these women to all of the children, but then when the book did come out and I had my preview copy right at Christmas time, the first person I read it to was my 8-year-old granddaughter. The girls are on either end of this spectrum, and in the middle is all boys. And she was my first, you know, my guinea pig, and she was wonderful. She did say to me at one point, "It's getting a little long, Cokie," but then the next morning she went to her mom and said, you know, "Let me read you Cokie's book." And she, you know, she started picking the women she liked best and all of that. So it was great.
I think a lot of people may not, you know, if they didn't read your other book, they may not be aware of some of these women.
Absolutely. I wasn't aware of them.
So tell us, where did you really find out? How did you research them? Because as you point out, there's not a lot of information available.
Research on women before the 19th century, especially, is really detective work. You are very constrained by what you can find, because many of them either didn't leave papers, or if they did, their papers were not well kept or destroyed. So you really do have to kind of go with the people who you can find. Now, because the idea behind the book was the women who influenced the founding fathers, I had to do Martha Washington and Deborah Reed Franklin and Abigail Adams, of course, but she's easy because we do have her wonderful, wonderful letters. But for the others, it really was pretty much going with the women whose letters and diaries and papers I could find, because otherwise, you know, you really just can't learn enough about them.
Where'd you even look? Where did you look to start to find
Well,
these?
We started with the Library of Congress. We were fortunate to be here in Washington. And now its website has gotten quite good. But that's new. The difference, I'll tell you, Marianne, the difference between researching in 2000 and in 2014 is night and day, because so much is now digitized, praise the Lord. But that was not true then. And so the Library of Congress, and then that kind of led to where the men's papers were, and that tends to be university collections or historical societies. And the best place, from my perspective, for the first time around, was historic homes, because they, by definition, care about the whole family. So places like Mount Vernon were very helpful, Monticello. So that the Schuyler Mansion in Albany, New York, where Eliza Schuyler Hamilton, Alexander Hamilton's wife, grew up, they were all very helpful. But you really do have to unearth these things.
You talk about getting so much of the information from letters. And you know, when they wrote them, I don't think they thought of them as historical documents. Did you sort of have to edit out some of the personal stuff?
No, the personal stuff is the best stuff. why would I do that? That's why women's letters are so much more fun than men's letters, because you absolutely nailed it. The men were so aware of the fact that what they were doing was extraordinary, forming this new concept of a nation. And they knew that if they won, that their papers would be preserved and published. And so they wrote with that very much in mind. So they were careful, and they were edited, and they were often ponderous and pompous. Whereas the women had no notion that their letters would be saved, and as I said, many of them weren't. But the ones that were, they go back and forth from, I think we should declare war on France, to I need that bonnet I left at home, and so-and-so had a baby this week, and so-and-so's baby died. I mean, it really does, in the equivalent of a tweet, you can get economic, social, and political news from these women, and it's just fabulous.
As you were reading all of this information, what did you feel like you were learning personally about them, and how did you relate to them?
Well, I think mainly what I feel is that they are incredibly brave, stalwart women. Now you had the phone, now you're going to have the dog. This is the problem.
Of variety today.
It's the first night of Passover, and I'm cooking for 45, so I couldn't go to a studio.
Oh, goodness. Well, thank you for doing this for us.
No, thank you for doing it. But at any rate, they were so just admirable. You know, there they were, just getting through the day in the 18th century was no easy task. And, just managing a household, and even for elite women who might have a servant, it was still very, very difficult. And some dread disease would come through, and you could lose two children in a week. I mean, think of it. And And yet, with all of the difficulties and many additional hardships imposed by the war, the Revolutionary War, which went on for 8 years, they were still so interested in the experiment of America and in the formation of the country, and so dedicated to it. Their letters are just filled with patriotism and sense of dedication and duty that are really admirable. And think of it, they would have to do that, you know, by candlelight at the end of a very long day, sit down and write these letters. I think that I would have just fallen into bed. But they felt the need to talk about what was going on in the country and to communicate with the men they loved.
I'm talking with longtime Morning Edition and ABC News commentator Cokie Roberts. She's written a new book, Founding Mothers, and we are taking your calls. If you'd like to call in a question for Cokie Roberts, 513-419-7100. You can email your questions, talk@wvxu.org. Also find them on Facebook and Twitter. One of the things that's interesting is a couple of different things, actually. Martha Washington, you talk about how she went to Valley Forge and she spent time there so the troops wouldn't desert. And then you have Ben Franklin's wife actually running the Postal Service while he's away. These are pretty big jobs, I assume.
Oh, absolutely. And Martha Washington, I knew about the winter at Valley Forge. That's one of the few things I knew about any of these women, was that Martha Washington had spent the winter at Valley Forge. What I did not know is that she spent every winter of the 8 long years at camp with the soldiers. And she didn't want to go. It was unpleasant, uncomfortable, and dangerous. She would have to go over very hard-to-travel roads, and she was a prime candidate for hostage-taking, and the British were taking Patriot women hostage. And, of course, she was married to the chief Patriot, so she was a target. And still she went because the general, as she called him, requested that she come because he thought that her presence and that of the other officers' wives was absolutely essential to troop morale. And so she would go to Mount Vernon for the summer, and the enslaved people there would make cloth, and they would preserve meats and pickle vegetables and make jams. And, you know, this is one of many contributions of African Americans to the revolution. And then she would pack up a carriage and get to camp in New Jersey or New York or wherever. And she would be cheered into camp. Lady Washington is here. And the troops adored her. And then she would cook for the soldiers with the other wives and sew for them and pray with them and nurse them and put on big entertainments for them. They would have all kinds of plays and dances and everything in camp. And it was all for the purpose of keeping the army together, because there were periods when they would say, no bread, no soldier, because they weren't fed or well housed or clothed or paid. So keeping morale up was absolutely essential.
So she had quite a responsibility then.
She did. She did. Now, I think it was also a good thing she was on hand, because George could be a little bit indiscreet. I mean, there was one night that he danced for 3 hours straight with the very pretty and flirty Catherine Green, the wife of Nathaniel Green. So it was good that Martha was on hand.
Keep an eye on her.
And she had a great sense of humor. I don't have this in the children's book, but she named a Tomcat Hamilton because it was quite appropriate. Yeah. She absolutely knew that this was her responsibility, and she talked about her duty. And that, you know, she was required to do this because it was her duty.
Well, Martha Washington is certainly a name that most people have heard. One I had not heard before was Eliza Lucas Pinckney. And she was in charge of her father's farm and really had some ideas about what to grow with the crops. That was very fascinating. Can you tell that story?
Well, so Eliza Pinckney is one of the women that I probably wouldn't have found, except she did have papers. And the reason she had papers was because at the age of 16, her father left her in charge of 3 plantations in South Carolina. Think of it. I mean, you know, we're nervous about giving 16-year-olds the car keys. And she And because she had to keep him, he was on the island of Antigua, and because she had to keep him apprised of the business, she kept letter books. She kept copies of her letters because it was the record book. And so we have her correspondence, thankfully, and she was the mother of two founders, Thomas Pinckney and Charles Cotesworth Pinckney, and a great statesman from South Carolina at the time, fought in the war and then went on to, one to be governor, one to help write the Constitution, all of that. And they were ambassadors, both of them. And she, but as a teenager, she was absolutely determined to start planting indigo in the colonies. And no one had ever been able to succeed in doing that. And indigo was a dye that was in great demand because it was the blue dye that was used in all the military uniforms in Europe. And so she tried and failed and tried and failed. And she had an overseer who was sabotaging her. And all the plantation owners in the area, laughed at her. But then she succeeded, and indigo became the biggest cash crop in the colonies. A contemporaneous book says that it was more important to the American colonies than gold was to Mexico. So she was this very intelligent and resourceful young woman. And she did all kinds of things on the plantation. She started silkworms and made silk. She grew a huge allee of oaks because she was sure that America would someday be a shipbuilding nation. It wasn't even a nation at this point, but she was sure it would be a great nation that would need ships, and she would have the wood. She taught the slaves, and she actually even acted as a lawyer and wrote wills. And she always said, look, if any real lawyer shows up, I'm happy to have him do the job. But until then, I'll do it for these people. So she was quite remarkable. And then when she married and had these children and they became great patriots, General Washington insisted on honoring her at her death. By this time, he was President Washington, because of the great service she had contributed to the country.
If you have a question for Cokie Roberts, 513-419-7100. Email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. One listener wants to know if you feel that the first, all of these women that you have here together, the wives of all of these famous men, knew each other. Did they work together at all?
Yes, they did know each other. The country was a small country, and they were variously related, even some of them. But certainly once the country was formed, the war was over and the Constitution, Constitution was finally written, they were all in New York together as the first capital, and then Philadelphia. So yes, they absolutely knew each other. Catherine Greene went to camp with the soldiers along with Martha Washington, and so they knew each other well. And then she came to Philadelphia after the war to try to get her pension and the money owed to her husband. So everybody entertained her and knew her. Abigail Adams, of course, was the vice president's wife when Martha Washington was the president's wife. So they knew each other well and talked about each other in their letters. Yes, they did know each other. They definitely knew each other. And they exchanged recipes. I have recipes in the grown-up books. I have recipes at the end because I love them, partly because they are some of them are just so weird that I have them.
What's one of the weird ones?
How to dress a cow's head, that kind of thing.
I'm taking you haven't tried any of those.
No, I haven't done that. But I have made Martha Washington's crab soup. And I like having the recipes because they're yet another point of connection. So we can feel like these women are people we know.
Tell us about some of the unusual things that women have done. You talk about women actually were spies.
Oh, well, spying, spying can be women's work. but yes, these women were spies and messengers, very dangerous assignments during the war. One of the spies was a woman in Philadelphia, Lydia Darrah. And what had happened was the British occupied Philadelphia, and they came to take over her house, occupy her house. And she said, well, I can't stop you from doing that, but I don't have any place to go. I mean, that's another thing that you don't think about is how often these women were refugees. But she convinced the British to let her stay in her house with them. And so she would then eavesdrop on their conversations with each other. And she would then write up what the British were plotting, and she would write it in code in little bitty letters and sew it behind the buttons of her little boy's coat and then send him out to greet his brother in the army. And so they would then, you know, take the buttons off his coat and find out what the British were up to. That's a story the children just love. You know, that's one that they particularly love. But there were lots of women messengers. And one of them, Emily Geiger, was riding, and this is so wonderfully illustrated by Diane, her hair flying behind her on horseback, and she was delivering a message to General Greene, and the British stopped her and said, we have to search you. But they had to find a woman to search her, you know, like TSA. And so while she was waiting for them to find a woman, she read the message, memorized it, and swallowed it. This is another one the children just love. And so by the time they came to search her, there was no message on her. And so they had to let her go, and she then proceeded on, knowing how dangerous it was, proceeded on and delivered the information to General Greene. There are lots of stories like that.
513-419-7100 is our number. Lauren's calling from Northern Kentucky. Hi, Lauren. What's your question?
Hello there. First, I must compliment Miss Cokie Roberts, if that's okay.
We'll always take compliments, Lauren. Thank you.
One of the reasons I like you is because, irrespective of what political background you have, you seem to be fair in your opinions when I see you on TV talk shows.
Well, I appreciate
that. So, getting into your book here, were you able, in times were different back then, were you able to find private writings of wives where there was well-deliberated opinions, particularly political views, that differed from their husbands and that they dared to write about?
Well, it's hard to know if they differed from their husbands, because when you have the women's writings, you don't have the men then writing back and saying, no, 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 no. But you have a huge, for instance, there is a fascinating correspondence between Abigail Adams and Thomas Jefferson, where they were disagreeing so vehemently that they finally decided to just call an end to the correspondence. And when John Adams found the letters, he wrote at the bottom, I knew nothing about this. And then years later, when a colleague of both men, when both men were long since had been president and all of that, a colleague of theirs, Elbridge Gerry, said, come on, this is ridiculous. You all were such good friends, and you were in it together. You wrote the Declaration of Independence together. And yes, you know, Jefferson defeated Adams, but you should be in touch with each other. So they agreed to start up a correspondence late in their lives. But Jefferson says, I'll do it, but not if I have to write to Abigail and not if she gets to write to me. But, of course, she didn't know that that had happened. So after he and Adams had been writing for a while, she did start writing to Jefferson, and he handled it graciously. But they were vehemently opposed.
Lauren, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Cokie, were there any things that just completely surprised you that you just never would have expected that you found in your research?
Well, I think that what I was surprised by how deeply political these women were. I really was. I just wanted to know about them, but I didn't realize how their letters would be filled with politics and filled with political good sense. And so that was a big surprise. And then as the time went on and the country was getting on more solid footing, they were recognized for their political good sense. So Dolly Madison, for instance, the men of the era talked about how powerful she was and how and how her politics were very important. But that was even true in the earlier time. One of the women in the children's book is the utterly delightful Sarah Livingston Jay. And she was the daughter of the first Patriot governor of New Jersey, William Livingston, who had five fabulous daughters. And he absolutely gave them all kinds of responsibility and treated them like sentient human beings instead of, you know, dumb little girls. And she then married John Jay, who became the first ambassador to Spain and then went to Paris for the peace process and eventually became the first Chief Justice. But her her letters are just filled with very political stuff, but which are delightful. But at one point, one of the Spanish politicians writes to one of his colleagues and says, about Jay, he says, we have to deal with the woman. Her opinion matters more than anything. He does anything she says for him to do. So, you know, so they were recognized for their political opinions and their power.
Do you anticipate that because of your book and maybe others and as people learn more and more about these women, that they are going to start showing up in school books?
They are, well, in school books, it's going to take a while, but it's gotten better. It's gotten a whole lot better. And I'm happy to say that my adult books are used in high schools. And so that's terrific. And this book, I've been around to schools talking to kids about, and the teachers are wonderfully receptive. So they're eager to have this kind of information. But what is true is that there's been a whole lot more interest in these women, period. So when I wrote Founding Mothers, when it came out in 2004, there were a couple of good biographies of Abigail Adams, but that was really about it in modern times. And now there's a wonderful Dolly Madison biography. There's a good Martha Washington biography. There are biographies of Betsy Ross has a new biography. There's a new biography of Peggy Shippen, who was Benedict Arnold's wife and was in it from the beginning, right with him. There's biographies coming out this year about Elizabeth Patterson Bonaparte, who was a wild woman at the time, and everybody knew her. So they are getting their due.
Thank you so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It was wonderful to talk to you. I love talking about these women. And that was really nice to visit with you and to get off my feet for a little while in the middle of this cooking.
I was going to say, enjoy dinner for 45. I'll be over, you know.
Okay.
Make it 46. Yeah. Thank you so much. We really appreciate
all right.
it. Thank We've been
you,
talking
Maria.
With Cokie Roberts. She's written the book Founding Mothers, Remembering the Ladies. In a moment, we'll get an update about the latest research into fibromyalgia. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.